The fact that I did not have a financial services background and they felt like that doesn't matter. You have what it takes. You have the will. You have the desire to be successful. What surprised me is just the way your career can be so robust. I hope for a role that would be impactful. I founded at Fidelity and here I am as an inclusion advisor. I have an opportunity now to bring out the best in people. The world truly needs that right now. I'm Natate and I found my purpose at Fidelity.
Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. This show is heard on WBCQ The Planet every Monday and Thursday evenings at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, although those times are subject to change. Broadcast on WBCQ The Planet, and which is located in Monticello, Maine, which we plan to be back up later, I guess, in November. I just got confirmation of November 13th, which is a Saturday in Holton, Maine, but we'll have more information available. You can also listen to this show on Podomatic, and actually there's probably about a dozen or more various platforms that use Spotify, Amazon, and a whole bunch of others. It's kind of interesting how you sign up for one and automatically a whole lot of other shows pick you up. And, of course, it's brought to you by Camp Constitution, which, among other things, runs a week-long family camp. And next year's camp will be held from July 18th to the 23rd, I believe, or July 17th to the 22nd, at the Singing Hills Christian Camp and Retreat Center in beautiful Plainfield, New Hampshire, about 1 hour's drive north and west of the state capital in Concord. And to learn more about that, and we are taking applications. So if you've been thinking about it, it's a first-come, first-served basis, and last year we were filled up a few weeks before camp, and we hope to be filled up even sooner than we were this year. And we also do numerous events around the region, so you can visit our website and check out our calendar to see what we'll be doing next. And with that, today I want to discuss the United Nations, the UN, which we celebrated UN Day on October 24th, just a few days ago. I didn't celebrate it, of course, but some people do. Well, actually, I acknowledge it, and what I try to do every year, I try to do this year-round to expose the UN, today's Monday, yesterday was Sunday, UN Day, the 24th, I tried my best to help expose the UN, and if you sign up for our emails, you would have received an email with some information about why we need to get out of the UN, and also have a presentation that John McManus gave at one of our camps, class he gave on the subject of the UN. And very powerful presentation. I think it's only about 45 minutes long, maybe an hour. And you can get that. Just go to our YouTube channel, put in United Nations, or Get Us Out of the UN. And not only will that one pop up, but you'll get some others too, because this is an issue we've been working on for years. And it's something that we need to continually expose. And with the hope that someday there'll be enough members of Congress to say, yep, time to get out. Now, schools all over the world propagandized for this filthy UN organization. And people say, why? You know, the UN, it was a good thing. It was meant to be a good thing. It was sound when it started. But, you know, the wrong people got a hold of it, and it sort of lost its way, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that's not the case whatsoever. The UN was always an evil organization from the very beginning. And how do I know that? Well, a man named Alger Hiss was the first acting general secretary. He was at the founding meeting in San Francisco back in 1945, and he wrote most of the UN Charter. He collaborated with a Russian, or I should say a Soviet national, whose name I can't remember offhand. And you might ask yourself, you know, who is Alger Hiss? Most people don't really know him, know the name. Well, he was an advisor to Franklin Roosevelt. He was in the State Department. And he was, like other State Department officials of his day and even today, he was a member of the Communist Party, USA, but worse than that, he was a Soviet agent. And you have to assume that anybody who was a formal Communist Party member is automatically an enemy agent, since communism is an alien evil entity. And in those days, if you were a member of the Communist Party, USA, you were part of an international criminal conspiracy. That's what they were. Communism was once defined. You'll say, well, the poor guy, he probably had a tough upbringing, and he blamed capitalism. Like so many misguided souls, he blamed capitalism on his plight. Well, no, that's not the case. Not that I would excuse that, but that's not the case. He was a product of an upper middle class background, a lifestyle that can only happen through a free market system. He went to college. He was a college graduate. I think he was, Princeton, but I've got to double check on that. So he was a man that was a privileged man, and instead of embracing the system that made his education and made his lifestyle possible, he wanted to destroy it. He wanted to turn it into a communist hellhole. So he deserves our contempt. He, of course, has long since passed away. So he wrote the charter, and I asked this question: what good can come from the pen of a man who would not only would he betray his country, but he would work for the likes of Joe Stalin? And by the way, Joe Stalin, he knew all about Joe Stalin. Whitaker Chambers, who wrote a book called Witness, Whitaker was also a communist, but he came to his senses and then had the courage to expose communism, and he testified against Alger Hiss. Alger and Whitaker were good friends in the Communist Party USA, and Whitaker was disillusioned by the terrible atrocities that Stalin was committing, although no thanks to the information from the New York Times. You see, fake news was alive and well way back then. They just didn't call it fake news. New York Times sent a reporter, Walter Duranty, to report on the marvels of the Soviet Union, and Duranty knew about the Ukrainian killing fields, the mass starvation, the cruelty, the brutality of the Soviet Union, the bread, the shortages. And he didn't report on it. Instead, he said, I've seen the future, and it works. They were praising the Soviet Union. So a lot of Americans, most of them, if you had to rely on the New York Times for information, you would most likely embrace that. If that was your only source of information, you would embrace the lie that the New York Times was promoting by one of its pro-communist, if not outright communist, journalists. But there was a lot of other people who supported the Soviet Union, all the big publishing houses, and also the UN. So, by the way, Hiss was brought to accountability to some extent. He could not be tried for treason. We weren't at war with the Soviet Union. You could definitely be tried for other things, which are serious crimes. The Rosenbergs, when they were giving secrets to the Soviet Union, they were executed for that. So instead, because the statute of limitations had run out on his activities, so it was, I think, what, 5 or 6 years, 7 years, he was simply charged for perjury, spent, a year or maybe a year and a half in jail, but got disbarred. But he got, of course, he was considered a hero and an icon among the left. And for years, he still denied his communist affiliation. But even by exposing him, a lot of people don't make the connection that he was a UN, he was the founding secretary of the UN and wrote the UN Charter. When you look at the UN Charter, and I don't have it in front of me, but I looked at it and read it a number of times, and you look at the U.S. Constitution, you're looking at two diametrically opposite documents, diametrically opposite. The U.N. never says the source of rights. Our Constitution, the Declaration, say the rights come from God. The purpose of government is to protect those God-given rights. So the Union, or I should say the U.N. Charter, makes no mention of God. It implies that rights come from government, which is very dangerous because the rights come from government. they can be taken away. And we see how rights have been taken away, because today many people think rights do indeed come from government, or in some cases they come from Lord Fauci, where he can just sneeze and say, okay, we can all wear masks, we can all wear two masks, we all have to have the vaccine. We don't really need the vaccine, and then a week later we need the vaccine, and not too many people in the mass media say, well, wait a minute, just last week you said we didn't need to, and you didn't have the power, and now we have to. So I'm digressing a little bit. But anyway, so the UN, again, is diametrically opposed to the U.S. Constitution. That alone should say we should have nothing to do with it. What's more dangerous is the influence the UN has in our own country. You say, well, wait a minute now. I don't see any UN soldiers walk. I don't see UN flags flying. Not too many, maybe over at home of some lefty professor, but you don't see that influence. The UN launched something called Agenda 21, which you've discussed a lot. And Agenda 21 has a sort of an entity. It's not officially a UN subdivision. It's more like a franchise. It's called the ICLEI, International Council for Local Environmental Initiative. Don't you love that word, initiative? Initiative is when someone takes action locally. You say, I'm going to go and clean this street up, or I'm going to get this lot cleaned out, or I'm going to invent something. I don't need it. That's initiative. But when it's top down, it's not initiative. So a lot of communities, a lot of towns and cities have joined this UN entity or subdivision or franchise and are implementing Agenda 21 in their own communities. The UN also has election monitoring. Can you believe that? First off, not one person that sits in the UN is elected. All of the delegates, all of the members of the Security Council, they're all chosen by their governments. When we go to the ballot box, we vote for president, or we vote for the electors that will vote for the president. We vote for the senator. We vote for the member of the House of Representatives. There's no place there for the UN secretary or all the UN officials that from the United States, the UN delegates. There's no place there. So they're chosen by the president. Now, it's not in the Constitution, because the UN is an unconstitutional entity. And anyway, it's they have influence in our government, even in the small towns of America, rural America and urban America. They monitor our elections. And the worst thing about the UN is that we fight wars under the UN auspices. That is the most dangerous thing that we do. Starting in Korea. And Korea, when people will talk about Korea, they'll say, oh, well, that was a police action. That wasn't a war. Well, what the heck is a police action? I pulled out my constitution. I looked in the index. The word police action is not there. Police action is, the local police, you have an issue, your house is broken into, your pocketbook is snatched, or someone comes into your store with a gun to rob you. You call 911, and the local police show up. They're there to enforce state law, not federal law, and definitely not world law. But when you change the laws to reflect the world law, then they'll be upholding international law. Let's look at the mask mandate. You had police enforcing a mandate, not even a law, that came from not just the CDC, but the WHO, World Health Organization, which is a UN subdivision. Interesting, isn't it? So, yeah, maybe the UN is a little harmful. Maybe it's not just a useless organization sitting there in Manhattan, in Midtown Manhattan on the East River. But, again, what makes it worse is that we send our soldiers to fight these UN wars, these undeclared so-called police actions. And Korea was the first. And then we had Vietnam. Now, Vietnam was fought under something called the SEATO, Southeast Asia Treaty Organization, which is an unconstitutional, which is no longer in existence. And just like NATO, now NATO still exists. NATO is a UN subdivision. I served as a soldier, and many of the listeners here served in NATO after World War II. I served there from the mid-70s, a couple of years, almost 2 years. I was a NATO soldier. And NATO is really a subdivision of the UN. And one of the goals of building world government is forming regional alliances. And if you read the NATO charter, it says in so many words that everything they do must be consistent with the UN, or they use the goals enshrined in the UN. They love to use the word enshrined when it comes to UN Charter, like it's in their eyes it is sacred. It's a sacred writ. You know, we as Christians look at the Bible, a Muslim looks at the Quran, a Jew looks at the Torah, a secular humanist looks at the UN Charter as the divinely inspired document, you know, and that's why they use the term enshrined. So we sent our soldiers, and we fought under the UN auspices, and this is why we do not win wars anymore. This is why we have stalemates in Afghanistan, a 20-year occupation, and then all of a sudden we pull out. So in Vietnam was the same thing. And we're still in Korea. In fact, we're still in Germany. 76 years later, when the war ended in Europe, we're still there. Now, I could see us being there for a few years afterwards, in some to have some presence there. But Western Europe is a relatively wealthy bunch of countries. I think the standard of West Germany before they merged with East Germany was, I think, one of the highest in the world. And they don't pay us. They're not paying us big money for us to be there. And so, I mean, it's one thing if you had mercenaries and the German government said, okay, we want to have 5 divisions, and you Americans do a good job, so we're going to hire you. We're going to maintain this private army. But that's not what we do. The taxpayers picking up the tab, and that's really a drain, more of a drain on our economy, like many other things are a drain on our economy. Then you have UN peacekeepers around the world that aren't American soldiers that have a history of brutality. You know your country's in tough trouble when you have some UN peacekeepers are showing up. There's a sordid record of police brutality, of UN so-called peacekeepers brutalizing, whether it's raping and murdering, selling children into sex slavery. From the Katanga, the Katanga was a province in what was once called the Belgian Congo, now Zaire. And Katanga seceded from Zaire when back in the early 60s when a communist by the name of Patrice Lumumba took over. He was trained in Moscow, so of course obviously the guy was a communist. And the UN waged war against this peaceful province led by a pro-Western Christian. In fact, my late friend Sam Blumenfeld knew him personally, interviewed him when he was in exile in Spain. And the UN, mostly white soldiers, most led by an Irish, I think his name was O'Connor, General O'Connor, Brian Cruz O'Connor, I think, they bombed hospitals, they murdered civilians, and by the way, Katanga was a free market, or it was free market-driven economy. They had, of course, blacks, whites, Jews, Christians, Muslims. They lived together in peace, and the country was a small middle class, but it was growing. But they had one thing that the UN wanted, it was uranium. When they found out they had uranium, that's why, Yana, you can't be independent and sovereign. Even though the UN violated its treaty, its own charter, not supposed to interfere in internal affairs, well, they did. That shows you how rotten. And there were U.S. people involved. I had a There were gentlemen who participated. His job was to fly supplies. He was in the Air Force, so the United States soldiers didn't take a role in the actual killings, but we were bringing supplies in there. And there was a book called 46 Doctors, I think it was called. There were 46 doctors that were part of an international group of doctors who didn't really take a stance. That they were just there to help. And they appealed to all of the leaders of what was called the free world, and even the Vatican. And they said, "In the name of God, stop this! You're killing innocent people." And it fell on deaf ears. You could look at the Ivory Coast a few years ago, and how the people rose up against them, and they killed people in cold blood. and what happened in Rwanda, where there was genocide. Well, here's an example of the UN sort of sitting things out. The UN was there to prevent the various warring tribes, the Tutsis and the Hutus, from killing each other, and that didn't work. They actually stood down. In fact, some of the UN vehicles were used to transport the Hutus to kill the Tutsis, and I think close to 1 million people were killed under their watch. And the Canadian general who was in charge of this mission actually became an alcoholic. He was found on a bench, I think, somewhere in Canada. It was Montreal. He was just so despondent over what happened. He was just disgusted by what happened at the UN and his role in it. Or I should say his lack of a role in it. So that's this is the UN in action. And let me recommend some reading. And if you go to our website, you can find several books that deal with the subject exclusively. One of them is called The United Nations Conspiracy by Robert E. Lee. I'm sorry, Robert W. Lee, not E. Lee. This book is a hardback book, and it was published in the early 80s. We have not a huge supply, but we have some, and it's I recommend that. And there's also a book written by a former colleague of mine, Steve Bonta. It's called The United Nations, A Critical Look. And it's a paperback, what they call mass paperback book. I think we're selling it for $5 or $6, and it includes postage. In fact, anything you buy from us, unless it's overseas, anything within the continental United States or the United States, the shipping is included. And then we have a little booklet that's about 20 pages, a pamphlet, well, not a pamphlet, but a booklet on the UN. I forget what it's titled. That's and okay, that's probably the most little handiest thing. And if you want to have bulk quantities, just go to our website and inquire. There's a place where you can contact us through the email and say, hey, look, I'd like to get 10, 20, 30 copies of this book. There's some other books that are we don't have available, but I'd recommend. One of them is The Fearful Master. That was one of the, I think, the first book I read on the UN. And it's a little pricey. You know, it's hard to find. You can get them on Amazon, but I think they start about $20 or $30. Well, I had a large batch of them, but I'm just down to my own copy, and I'm going to hang on to it. But that was written by Ed Griffin, and I know it personally. And actually, I was at his Red Pill Expo a couple of years ago, where I had a batch of them, and he was able to autograph them. In fact, his wife bought copies from us because they didn't have any. She wanted to give one to copies to her children and grandchildren. So I do recommend that book. It's very important, folks, that we learn about this organization called the UN and try to expose it. I mean, it's just amazing how the propaganda. You have these UN associations all over the country. You have a media that refuses to expose the UN. So it's our job, and we all become parts of the media by doing this. And I challenge anyone. I ask these when I'm speaking to groups. I might ask the group, how many people have read the Constitution or at least looked it over? And most hands go up. How many people have read the UN Charter? Very few of any hands go up. And then also, when I ask the question, how many people have read the Communist Manifesto, few hands go up. And I said, it's important. It's important to read the enemy's documents. People will come to my library and they'll say, hey, what's this coming? You have 15 copies of the Communist Manifesto. What's wrong with you? Are you a communist? No, of course not. But if we need to know what the enemy is doing, we need to know their playbook, and that's what their playbook is. So when you come out and say the income tax is unconstitutional, although there's an amendment there, they passed an amendment that gave the Congress the right to tax money without appropriation, or I should say enumeration. In other words, it used to the taxes were based on like your part of the bill, like say Massachusetts where I used to live. Let's say, for the sake of argument, that the federal budget was $1,000, and each state, based on its population, had to pay the federal government that portion. But they did away with that. Now, of course, income, I don't believe your wages should be considered income. I mean, I'm exchanging my time and my service and my labor for money. That's not really income. Would be money you make on investments and things of that nature. But anyway, But plank number two calls for a heavy progressive income tax. I think plank number one, free education for all children. Huh, free education. Well, what's wrong with that, Hal? Plenty if it's, first off, there's nothing free. Somebody has to pay for it. And if all this, if the only school that's there is a government school, then that's pretty bad. He also talks about the credit be in the hands of the state, and we have something that's similar to that. It's called the Federal Reserve Bank. It's not exactly what Karl Marx had in mind, but it works the same way. It manipulates the currency, and it's a vehicle for inflation. I am glad to learn that people are understanding what inflation is more so than they did in the past. Inflation is nothing more than an increase in the money supply. And we've seen that as Biden's handlers and the Democrats in Congress and maybe even a few Republicans want to pass spending bills, trillions of dollars. It's absolutely, and they have the audacity. They're telling us that it's not, it's all paid for. We don't, it doesn't cost us anything. And people are listening to that. What? $3.5 trillion? And then another one for a trillion and a half, and it's all paid for? Who's paying for it? They actually think the American people are that stupid. And unfortunately, they're getting away with it. Maybe the American people are stupid, or at least too many of them. Actually, when you think about it, you think about all those people who pulled the lever for Joe Biden. I do believe there was some election fraud, but even getting 1,000 votes would be too many for a man like Biden. And you know what's interesting too? You see these politicians, these arrogant politicians, with their disdain of the American people, people like Pelosi. You can see they just ooze with contempt. I don't blame them. If I was Nancy Pelosi, if I was a Chuck Schumer, if I was a Biden, I would have complete contempt for the people who voted for me. I think it was Nikita Khrushchev that said, if you could spit in the face of an American, he'd call it due. Well, I'm sure these people believe that because they're spitting on our face. Everything they do is destroying our country, is damaging our country. And we still, Biden has still has, what, 38% of the American people, the last poll, 38% approval rating? And some of these people who voted for Biden will vote for him again, no matter what damage he does to the country. So how can you not have contempt for those people? You imagine taking your car to a repair shop, you know, for an oil change, and they end up cutting the brake lines, putting holes in the tires, and you keep on going there. And you keep on going there, and you keep on using that service station, knowing that he's sabotaging your car. He's going to get you killed. That's what we do every 4 years or 2 years. We vote for the same people. Now, I know not all the people vote that way, but I can see why they have contempt. You call your congressman, they don't need to listen to you. I get elected by a 10% margin. I'm saying I don't care what you say. But I'd like to think some of that's going to change. I have to be optimistic. I know that many people are much more informed today than they were last year or 4 years ago or 10 years ago. And I know what we do in a small way helps to add to that. We reach out to people all the time, and you know, and that's really what we needed. That's what everybody has to do. And yeah, folks, pick up your Constitution. And if you're listening to this in a foreign country, you know how important a strong United States is. A strong United States under the hands of a constitutionalist, a constitutional Congress that does not believe in interfering with you. In fact, when Trump spoke, I think he spoke at the UN, and he said that the sovereign nation, that he was speaking to world leaders, he said, you should put your nations first, I'm going to put mine first. And people heard that. Oh my goodness. Putting a president of the United States, putting the interest of his country first? Well, we haven't done that in over 100 years. That's absurd. But guess what, folks? That's the only way we're going to reverse it. We're going to stop this big government and international government. And the United Nations is that world government entity. Well, I got to be signing off. My time has run up. I want to thank you for listening. You've been listening to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. And until next week, may God richly bless you.
Where's my order? Does anyone know how to find my order?
How can I find my order?
Break free from customer support monotony. Welcome to Intercom, the customer support platform that uses chatbots, shared inboxes, apps, and more. Intercom's business messenger resolves questions that can be answered automatically, so customer support feels less like Groundhog Day and more like help is on the way. Go to intercom.com/support to learn more.